Jetzt hier zu sein, heißt nicht, hier auch bleiben zu dürfen. Kein gewollter Umzug, eher ungewolltes Verlassen. Dein Hab und Gut in Sack und Pack. Von Heimatverlierern zu Zuhausefindern. Vom Kommen und Gehen.
I'm going to put it here.
A good authentic thing when you're smoking a cigarette, because all Bosnians do.
Yeah, well, not all.
Okay.
Yeah, really, not all.
I think I will say something in German first.
Of course.
So, willkommen zu einer neuen Folge von Vom Kommen und Gehen. Heute ist es eine ganz besondere Folge, weil ich in Bosnien bin gerade, in Bosnien und Herzegowina, und ein Interview machen kann mit einer Frau, die eine ganz besondere Geschichte zu erzählen hat. Und zwar geht es hier um den Bosnienkrieg. Und genau, das wird sie uns jetzt alles selber erzählen. Hi, Anissa.
I just said that it's a very special episode today, because I can talk with you, so it's in English. And we are here in Bosnia, so that's very uncommon for my usual interviews. So it's good. Thank you that I can talk with you.
Thank you.
Usually at the beginning, I just ask a few questions, and I just say, what do you prefer, this or that? But I think it's too less to get to know you a little. So I just will start with asking you, where were you born?
Yeah, I'm from Mostar in Bosnia and Herzegovina.
And you grew up there?
For 12 first years, mm-hmm. and then for 3 more after the war.
When you returned?
Yes.
Uh-huh. And when were you born?
1980.
So you're now?
37.
37. And where in the world did you live already?
Well, as I said, I lived for 12 years in Mostar, and then during the war I lived in Croatia for a year, and after that in Sweden. Came back to Mostar, and now I live in Sarajevo. That was your question.
That was my question.
Yeah, okay.
And if I would ask you which ethnicity you have, what would you say?
I always say I'm Herzegovinian. Uh-huh. Herzegovinian.
But that's unusual, right?
Yeah, well, I don't know. We have some differences between Bosnians and Herzegovinians. Not differences that tear us apart, but we all have some kind of specialties.
Uh-huh.
And I like to say like that, I'm not Bosnian, I'm Herzegovinian.
And what is it about with Herzegovinian people? Can you say what the difference
well,
are?
Well, first of all, the climate is different.
That's really true. Yeah. It's warmer and more tropical.
Yes, and we don't have so much wood, we have stone. So people used to say that, especially for women from Herzegovina, they are like strong and tough, and you never fight with a Herzegovinian woman because she's always going to win. No, but it's not because of that. I don't really know what ethnicity I belong to. My father and my mother taught me that I am like cosmopolitan, you know. The world is my place. I could maybe survive anywhere. People like to think that, mm-hmm. but yeah, well, we'll say like that. I'm Herzegovinian and cosmopolitan.
The next question is a bit related to that, because I didn't want to ask you which ethnicity you feel like, because usually the people, or some people, don't want to say that they are this or that ethnicity, because here it's like a very big topic. And yeah, I just wondered if religion matters to you anyhow.
No. I'm not a religious person. I don't want to say if I'm atheist or agnostic or whatever. I just, in that, how do you say it? In question of religion, I'm not belonging anywhere, really. Not a Muslim, not Christian, not Buddhist or anything. I'm just... So that is a big deal in Bosnia. To say that you are not a believer in God, to say that you are not believe in God that they believe in, that is a big thing. You're always on the margins of society if you act differently than everybody else. Mm. So,
but do the people care that you're not, that you don't claim that you are, have like this or that religion, or is it, does it matter anyhow for you, your friends, family?
I don't know. People gather when they believe in something, they gather around that. You know, when you are a believer, especially Muslim, then you are like, you have most of your friends are the same. I don't know. I'm acting like I'm taught. I'm not going to act like when somebody says act like this and you will be better. It's something that I won't do if it confronts my beliefs mm. of how mankind or man should be. So it is a big deal in Bosnia, and I think now it is a big deal everywhere, especially with everything that is going on. I think everyone is starting to gather around things that they believe in and not confront each other too much.
Mm-hmm.
That's my opinion. I don't know. I have lived here for a long time now, so maybe I'm just stuck with it. But I think it's something, especially with the terrorism and everything, that people are just separating mostly
mm-hmm.
about the religion, especially. So.
Yeah, and I think especially here it's a very big topic because it's always connected with ethnicity.
Yeah, I think, in my opinion, it's not believed. It's not really, it doesn't matter really to believe in God anymore. It's just that you belong to some group.
Yeah.
Because if you don't, then it's quite harder and different to live.
Yeah.
And to work and anything else. To raise your children, by the way, so.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think that many of those believers, I don't think they really believe in God. That's my opinion.
It's just because
they act differently, you know. You have special, we'll call them rules. You have special rules in religions that you have to follow if you think of yourself as a believer or Muslim, for example. And they don't just follow the rules. They follow the rules that they like. And not that.
Yeah, but it's European
Muslims. Yes. Of course, the war had the big role in all of that. That's certainty, because you will always have people who say, "But they killed us for that because we are from different religion or different ethnicity or whatever." So you always have that. As an argument,
yeah,
with those
or a
people.
Reason.
Yes.
I think we will talk about a few problems in the history of Bosnia, but what would you say is like today the biggest problem of this country? Can you say that in short sentences?
I think people are getting lazy because they don't see any perspective. So they just stay where they are. And not thinking about the future that much because they don't... I think they are scared of future, really. So we discussed it before, a few times that we met. Young people drinking coffee, doing nothing, writing things on Facebook about things that they really don't know about. And that's about that. But, of course, I'm talking about majority. You always have few small groups of people or individuals that act completely different. They're work or do something with their lives. They're fighting against anything that they don't like, not fighting like physically fighting, but doing anything they can in their power. But it's so hard to do it here that you just give up. So it's easier to just sit around and talk about the weather or something else than to talk about your future. That's my honest opinion of the young people here, really. They're just lazy because they are scared of their future. That's my sentence.
Okay. Can you tell me a little bit more of your childhood and how the attitude of your family? I mean, where did you grow up in Mostar? Because maybe we should say something at the beginning that Mostar is like a divided city.
Today it is. But the one thing that people are forgetting or don't really know about Mostar is that that was the city of ex-Yugoslavia that had the most, I hate that word, but mixed marriages in ex-Yugoslavia. I mean, when I say mixed, I mean Serbs, Croats, Croats, Muslims, Muslims, Serbs, and it all goes with religion, of course, to maybe explain better for German people or who is going to listen to this, whoever is going to listen to this. Christians and Muslims and Orthodox Christians and Christians, it's something that it's not quite normal in the world, really, any today. So Mostar was really a city that was totally mixed up. And today it's divided. How? I don't know. But Croats and Muslims, Christians and Muslims, or Croats or Bosniaks and whatever. For a few days ago, I read something interesting, and it's that Mostar today is fighting, is fight between fascists and anti-fascists. It's never like, it was never about Muslims and Croats. And I truly believe in that, because the people that I know from Mostar, they are all, they are not believers, they are not, you know, I'm Bosniak and that's it. They are like more, I'm from Mostar, I want the whole city and living some kind of a dream, because it's hardly going to happen. It was a small, not small, but small touristic place. Very nice to live in, very close to the sea.
Did you live in the center of Mostar, or did you grow up there?
Yes. You have like west and east side now. Everything is divided on west and east. Never in north and south.
If you say the west side is more for Croats, and the east side is for Bosniaks live there.
We have like this huge green nice river, and everybody takes that as a dividing point.
The Neretva, right?
Yes, Neretva. And the west side now belongs to the Croats, and the east side to the Muslims or Bosniaks.
But you still have like a divided community, right? I mean, there is like
they are not
organization.
Yes, they are not. They are not accepted by the government or federal institutions, but they are divided, like police, hospitals, fire department, schools.
There is one on each side, right?
Yeah, there is one on each side.
But how was it when you grew up? I mean, there was
It wasn't like that.
Was one city.
One city, and in my class I had people. I have to say it first. The strangest thing in Bosnia is that people hear your name and they put you in some kind of group. Is it Bosnians? Is it Bosniaks? Is it Muslims, Croats, and whatever it is? I hate that. I always say I'm going to change my name to Michael Jackson or whatever, you know, so that nobody cannot say, you know, can say you are a Muslim or whatever else.
People would say about your name that it's a Muslim name,
yes,
right?
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. Actually, it's an Arabic name, but whatever. So when you look at the names in my class, we had like 30% this, 30% of that, and blah, blah, blah. So we were mixed up as Mostar was. So I never felt it like that, and my parents never taught me that. I never knew what differences does it make if somebody believes in that or this. I knew about Easter, I knew about Christmas, I knew about everything, because when we were children, we just like celebrated anything, which is totally different picture from the picture that people have of Yugoslavia today, as here. Even here and even at the rest of the world, if they know anything about it, it's always the same story, you know. Dictator Tito, you had to believe or not to believe, and everything had to be like he said it should be. I never felt it. My parents never felt it. I never had any kind of need to believe in differently. I had a good life. I didn't care, you know, when you are like, have your security, have your school, have your semester, have your vacation, happy childhood. You don't really think about dictators and any punishment or whatever the people are saying now. So I thought a lot about different religions more than now. So that's my opinion of Mostar and Bosnia before and Yugoslavia before. You know, Bratstvo Jedinstvo, maybe somebody told you that. Mm-hmm. That was like a slogan that they used. Brotherhood and unity.
Ah, yeah, brotherhood and unity. Yeah.
It was really like that for me. Even I was born a month before Tito died. So Tito wasn't even alive during my life. So, but most people are going to tell you that's the main reason we had it like that during the war, because we believed that everything was unity and we believed we were all the same, and that was not quite like that. And that's because we got hurt and died and everything else during the war, because we were like stupid and naive to believe that something like that exists.
Mm. But you told me you had like a cosmopolitan family attitude, so we were very open-minded also, but did you never experience some sort of difficulties because of different religions or different...
No, never, really. During my childhood, never.
Oh, but that's a little bit surprising, I think.
Yep. For me, it's not. As I told you, my grandmother used to live in this small valley or street. And everyone lived there, Croats, Serbs, Muslims. And as I said, there was one woman who celebrated Easter every year and Christmas. And she was like bringing us eggs and cookies and cakes. And we didn't really care about what it really was. It was like, okay, Christmas, yay, we're going to have some cake, you know, or whatever. It was same for Ramadan, how do you call it in German?
Yeah, Ramadan.
Yeah, we celebrated it because somebody in the neighborhood celebrated it, and it was a reason to celebrate, and it was...
But did you fast also, or did you celebrate the
iftar? That's new wave in Bosnia, you know. Because before the war, I think mostly older women and men were true believers, mm-hmm. who fasted and went to the mosque and everything else. So I think that's something new that came long after the war or during the war. So.
And so even though Tito died when you were born, you still experienced this whole unity thing and
yes.
you grew up in a
yes.
unity.
Well, actually, they taught us at school quite a lot about Second World War. Mm-hmm. We had to know everything. Maybe that was something that was not really necessary, like 50 years from Second World War. We were young, we don't know, but I think every one of us had some member in the family who talked about Second World War.
Mm-hmm.
I had my grandmother from my father's side who talked about Italians coming to her village. And my grandfathers, both of them, were at the partisans and fought against Ustashas, Chetniks, Italians, Germans, and
every German artillery like really destroyed Mostar in Second World War, right?
I don't think. I don't know. If it was that kind of destroyment. I think most big cities suffered from the bombing and everything, like, for example, Belgrade or even Sarajevo.
Mm-hmm.
But you have so many fractions here in Bosnia. You have some kind of different kind of stories from Second World War, which are almost related to this war, because the same stories happen again. Same people attack again, so...
It's so interesting, because I usually talk about people about Second World War.
Yeah.
And now I'm speaking with you about a war that was, like, so recent, you know? It's not such a long time that it happened. And it's really weird, because you see still so many things even here in Sarajevo.
If I can say my opinion,
yeah.
I don't believe in war anymore. I don't think...
Did you ever believe in war?
No. I think from the First World War... After all, there wasn't war anymore. I think they should come up with new word for war. Because war before, in my opinion, was like big field and people fighting against each other and taking the territory step by step. Second World War and any other war in any other country afterwards was not a war. You know, for me, it's not war to live in the city of Sarajevo under the siege and have like bombings all around you. That's not the war. That's killing. That's massacre. That's murdering. That's not war. Mm. That's my opinion. Mm. And when you had, as you said, Second World War, when you had like so much destroyment and so much weapon, so much new weapon coming along the way, so strong forces fighting against each other, destroying everything, that's not war, you know, that's madness.
Yeah.
So that's my opinion.
And when the, how did you experience it when the madness began in Mostar? I mean, you were 12 when the war really started.
It was actually my birthday.
It was your birthday? Really?
Yes.
Okay, so just when, at which point did you realize as a child that something was going on? Can you remember that?
Yes, of course. We all almost realized it because the war first started in Croatia. Even if we were too young to understand what was going on, my mother, for example, had a friend in Dubrovnik, which was under this, some kind of siege before even war started in Bosnia. And as children, we saw all the army forces gathering around Mostar a lot before even the war even started. So we all sensed that something was wrong. You know, you see military men walking down the street with the guns and everything, and you've never seen that before, and you understand that something is going on. And you can hear your parents talking about it. You know, my mother always talked about, we should run now, something bad is going to happen. We all knew, but we didn't want to believe that something wrong is going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So actually, my birthday, as I said, was we were all sitting around, like singing or whatever, gossiping and talking about our sympathies at school. When the bomb exploded, that was like a big fuel truck, which was parked in the. Or how do you call it, like a military camp for soldiers to
like an army
train
base?
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes. And the bomb was stuck under that truck, and it was really huge explosion. It was very long from my house, from my apartment, but we all felt it. And that's the first thing I remember about explosions and the detonation. The first memory of the war that I have is that. My birthday and the big truck exploding, and everything from that on is just like, as I call it, madness.
But what happened then? I mean, you feel this explosion?
Yeah, well, parents started to call their children on the phone. Everybody panicked, of course. Everybody was, you know, no internet, nothing. You know, everybody's calling each other. What happened? And we got the explanation. I think to this very day, nobody really knows who did it. Yes, mm-hmm. There are many speculations. You know, history is written by the winners, so everybody's saying what they want, but I don't really know what happened. Somebody did put it there.
But you didn't really get it before that happened, that something like this is really going to happen?
As I said, we all saw it, but we just didn't want to believe it.
Mm-hmm.
We all saw it on TV, you know, we all saw what's going on in Croatia, even if the madness in Croatia wasn't like that big as it was here, after all. But we all saw it, didn't want to believe it.
And when is your birthday again, like which date?
5th of April.
5th of April, mm. Okay. And what happened, like the days Next, after that?
Days after, you know, the school was out, the schools mm-hmm. were not working, and maybe a week from that on, we ran from Mostar like refugees. We've been living in the, how do you call it, under the ground,
in a
basement.
Mm-hmm.
For a few days, as everybody else.
Was this a bunker, or was it just
an emergency situation? We had a bunker, and mm-hmm. we had a basement. But mostly people ran to the bunker, but after all moved to the basement because they sensed that it's not going to be like that dangerous to run to the bunker.
Why did you even have a bunker?
I don't know. Those were some new buildings, and I don't know. The engineers at that time thought that it would be good to have some kind of special place under the ground to hide. Not every building had that, but those new buildings had that, really. And beds, you know, beds and some kind of first aid kits and everything in that bunker. I don't know. They were maybe expecting something. I don't know. But that's the first thing that I remember, you know, living in the basement for a few days and just running from Mostar to Croatia.
So you hide with your whole family in this bunker?
Yeah, my whole family ran. My father is, how do you call it, huge pacifist. It's he's a man who will never, ever take a gun in his hand. So he also ran.
So like you packed stuff from home, or how much did you take?
I believe that we will return very soon. Mm-hmm. That was my belief. And I packed my school things, my school books and my stupid things like that. My mother packed pictures when we were young. We didn't pack like a lot of things, but my father used to work in Croatia a lot. So we stayed at friends in Croatia and just like took care of ourselves for the first days as good as we could. And then we realized that madness wasn't just, it's going to be short madness, like it's going to end very soon and we will come back. We realized that it's going to last very long.
Can you remember the situation in the city? I mean, did you realize, I mean, what was going on out there? Can you remember a few, like the days before you ran?
As I told you earlier, we saw very many soldiers, walking around.
Soldiers from which?
those soldiers were actually from Montenegro.
Mm-hmm.
As people, I don't know if people know, but the war in Bosnia and Herzegovina, the first forces that were fighting, that was the Yugoslavian National Army, and the small fractions of people who gathered around to I don't know, defend what they thought needed to be defended. So it was Yugoslav National Army. So forces.
It was mostly Serbian people, you could
say? Yes.
And Montenegrinian people,
yes.
Right?
Yes. At that time, yes. At that time in Bosnia, everywhere, it was the same forces fighting against each other. Year after, Mostar is going to have a fight between Croats and Bosniaks or Muslims.
But first, like, Bosniak people fought with Croatians against this Yugoslav army that was mostly Serbs and Montenegrinians.
They were on the same side, as you call it, yes.
And how was it then when Montenegrinian soldiers walked through your part of the city?
I don't know, it was strange. There's one interesting story about that too. My mother worked at the school. She was a teacher and she worked at the school at the village outside of Mostar. And she saw them every day. You know, they were taking places around the mountains and hills around Mostar. They were taking positions. As I said, it's not the war anymore. You just take your position and drop bombs on people. So, and she knew, as I told you, she knew that something was terribly going wrong and something will happen, because they had all that weapon gathering around the city of Mostar. And the same was here in Sarajevo. It was like just taking the mountains, taking the hills, taking your position, and have a city like this, like the, at the palm of your hand, and you can do whatever you want. Close every exit, people cannot come out, and nobody can come in, and you can do whatever you want. So that was like that in Mostar too, you know, they just
besieged the city.
Yes, yes.
But can you imagine it? Like, I just tried to imagine the situation. Was it like a complete mess going on in the city? Was everybody going crazy?
We had some kind of view at the hill from our apartment, and after that explosion that I talked about earlier, the very next day you could see very large number of cars just passing by. You know, people were leaving, of course. People were afraid and they were leaving. That is something that most of the Bosnians here would or Herzegovinians could talk about for hours, even if we try to forget it and not think about it as something bad. Because if you continuously think about it as something bad, you're going to go mad. refugees, migrants, or whatever you call them. It took me like very long time to explain to people that I didn't come to Croatia or didn't come to Sweden because I wanted to. It's simply because you go to survive. You go to
save your life.
Yes, to save your life. You could have stayed. My husband stayed. He was here during the whole war and, you know, had seen many, many worse things than I did. And if you compare his life to mine, mine was great because I went to school. I was like safe. I was fed. I had clothes. I had a home, a roof over my head. So of course my life was better. But if you think about this, just losing your house, losing your life, or losing everything else that you had for 12 years, even if that sounds too little or not too much. Time, then psychologically or whatever, it's just not as great as normal children have.
They tried to build this Sieg. So was it so easy for you to still leave?
Yes, at that time, yes. Later on, no. During the war between Croats and Bosniaks, it was not easy to leave the city. And actually, that was the hardest time in Mostar. Mostar didn't have so much hard time during the war between Serbs and because not the same as Sarajevo or Goraj, they are whichever city in Bosnia you can pick one, you can have that story. But in Mostar, no. So it was kind of strange. People just started to realize that maybe this whole thing was a part of a bigger plan, to divide the country between Serbs, to have big Serbia, big Croatia, and what's ever left for the people who think of themselves differently, to kill or to, you know, how do you call it when you force someone to leave their home?
To expel?
Yes, someone
people
from their home.
Mm.
So that you just start after a while, even as a child, you start to think of that as something, as some kind of part, bigger plan that we just didn't have anything to do with.
Mm. So you just packed your car and
we left. And yeah. As I said, I lived in Croatia for a year.
Where did you live there?
I lived first in Makarska, small. Touristic, not small, not very small anymore, touristic place at the Adriatic Sea. And after on Promina, that's a small place, very near. And the reason we moved there was, as I said, was because my mother was a teacher and they planned and they started a refugee school there because there were a lot of refugees, a lot of children who didn't go to school. Same as today, the problem with the refugees, they don't go to school, they don't get an education. So they started with a small school, with real teachers, people that fled. And we went to school there. So we moved to that small place and went to school there and actually had a quite nice time because there were people from all over the Bosnia and Herzegovina. And you thought you were... you learn things that you never learned before about cities, about small places, villages, and everything. You actually get to know your country very well.
And how was it for you when you were like 12, 13 years and you had to leave your home city?
It's like maybe best explanation. It's like a dream. You always you wake up every morning and you think, okay, maybe this day is going to be differently, maybe I will go home, but actually it's not. So you always think it's okay, it's going to stop and I'm going back. And as the time goes by, you understand it's never going to be the same, but you still hope that somehow, some way, it's going to be the same. You're going to continue your life where you left off.
But did you feel safe there? I mean, you and your family?
Yeah, well, we had some problems with the local municipality or local people there. It's the thing that every single migrant and refugee goes through whenever you come, you know. It's the same thing all over. Why did you come here? You bother us. You mess up with our lives. We had a very nice life before you came here. Now everything is dirty. You're taking our jobs. It's the same story everywhere. So as I said earlier, it took me very long time to explain to people that I didn't want to come there. You know, there was something taken away from me and my family, and I had to leave. So actually, when the war between Croats and Muslims started, we decided to move to Sweden because we couldn't take it anymore to live there so near to Mostar and with Croats, which we were at the war now, you know.
So yeah, I mean, maybe we should explain a little bit more. I mean, at the beginning you told already that there were like Bosniaks and Croats fighting against the Yugoslavian army.
Yes, together.
But then after a year they developed some very hard difficulties, and there was now a war between Bosniaks and Croats in the city.
That's the thing, that there weren't any difficulties. That's just a bigger plan, you know, because now
still the people were fighting against each other, you know. Yeah, they were former neighbors, but then they just started to fight, and then it's just so strange to understand, right?
It was exactly like that. You start to fight with your former neighbors.
Yeah.
It was exactly like that, because at one point when we were living in Croatia, my father's friend came to us and brought us a piece of paper. And that paper was like, this apartment is now belonging of HVO, which is Croatian army. And that was our apartment. Like, they came to our apartment. My aunt, my mother's sister, actually lived there. And she was a part of Bosnian army. She was arrested and they took our apartment. And during two or three nights, they did that to every single Muslim family in the neighborhood or at the west side, as you called it. Like, they came to the houses and apartments, arrested people or just cast them out and took the apartment and said, this is ours now.
Mm-hmm.
So you cannot say that happened overnight. You cannot say that happened because of some kind of difficulty or who started the war. It was really, and it was only the part of big plan. Was it between Milosevic, Tudjman, Izetbegovic, like three presidents of Croatia, Serbia and Bosnia? Was it between our Bosnian leaders at that time? I don't know. Or we know, but people just refuse to believe in that. It's harder to believe that you were a part of a bigger plan than to believe that you were fighting for the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe now, after how many? 22 years after the war, people are realizing that they were fighting for what really? Nobody knows. But at that time, it was really hard to believe or to just realize, oh my God, it doesn't matter if I fight or not, I'm just a pawn, you know.
Mm. It's just so strange, because when I went to Mostar, I mean, there is this old, the Stari Mosque, like the old bridge, and it's so beautiful, you're like picturesque, but you see like there's just this little river, it's just very narrow, you know, it's not like a big river between the both sides, as you call it. And it's so strange to imagine that there was like this divided city, because it's like, it's a very, very small town, Mostar, you know, like especially the old city. And there are no really big distances between this side and this side. So it's just so hard to imagine. And everybody was standing on their sides. And it's just so strange, because it's like a little, I think there was a little community before, and you knew who was on the other side, and just imagine that you immediately, like,
you had your friends
fight against, yes.
You had your friends. That's the thing, you know. Just people turn sides overnight. Maybe they are afraid. Maybe they got a lot of money. Maybe they got promises that they will be some kind of strong political factor afterwards. I don't know. But my father, my friends' fathers, and everybody had friends. And overnight they turned. you know, I'm a Croat now, you're Muslim, you don't belong here, go away, is the easier way to explain. But it's like that.
But when I changed it in Mostar, did you experience it when you lived in Croatia, that the people turned against you and your family a little bit more?
Yeah.
I mean, there was a change
in
the whole area, right?
That was the politics, yeah. And it's still like that. Normal people, I'm always doing that. You have to explain what I'm doing, what I'm showing, because...
Sie macht Entenfüßchen.
The normal people. The people that don't really care about which religion you are and what you are, they get that, they understand that, but the people who are just poisoned with hatred and whatever it is, I don't really know what it is anymore. They're never gonna get it.
But it's interesting that you had maybe. We can't talk about love, but you had like acceptance before, and then some people told them that they should hate, and they hated. And that's why I'm wondering how easy it is. Like, how can it be so easy to put hatred in the brains of
people? You bring up the old stuff. You bring up the old stuff. You bring up history, mostly. You know, they go 500 years ago. You know. They did this and this to us. It's time to come back. It's time to return. It's time to bring us our land back and whatever they are talking to that people. I don't know. But it's something like that. And it's always the same, you know. It's the same in every country. And it's not a big secret now that all the madness, not wars, it's not led by that. That's not the reason why the war begin or... And it's always the territory, it's always the water, the oil, the whatever it is, gold or whatever else it is, you know. It's not, doesn't have anything to do with history. It doesn't really have anything to do with the religion. It's always part of the bigger plan. So that's the same thing here. And when you are a child and you are small as I was, you don't really get that at the beginning, but you realize that sooner than other teenagers do, living their normal lives at the secure European or whatever country, other country in the world.
Do you think you had to grow up faster
yes.
than any
yes.
other
yes.
child
yes.
didn't experience
yes.
war, madness?
I have that stupid, I don't know, my father always brought us to the TV and not forced that, but we watched the news. You know, I was 7, 8 years old when I started watching the news. We had like cartoon and then the news and then you go to bed. And I was really young when I watched Ethiopian children hungry and starving and everything else. I was really small. I was really small child. So I was very used to the idea that not everything is fair in this world, that the people are starving, dying, murdered, killed, or whatever the thing is that normal child should not think about at that time. So for me, it wasn't like so strange that something bad is happening. It's not the idea that something bad is happening that was torturing me. It was more, why does it happen? So yes, of course, I was as anybody, any other child, now and then I was being forced to grow up very fast.
So to sum it up, you had to flee from Mostar because of the Serbian Montenegrin army, and then it changed in Mostar, and Croats were fighting against Bosnians.
And we fled from Croatia. Yeah.
And then you fled from Croatia because like the whole atmosphere changed, and you went to
Sweden.
Stockholm.
not Stockholm, but more Göteborg or Gothenburg, as it's called in English. And that was a different kind of story.
And why did you go to Sweden?
That's a funny story. We didn't really choose to go to Sweden. It was like, we are going somewhere. Long, far, far away from here. And many people were fleeing at that time. There were buses were just full with people, mostly from Mostar, because the real hell in Mostar started then. And we were like in Poland at some kind of place called Świnoujście, I think. And it was like, are we going to Denmark or Sweden? It was a ferry boat, you know. And people didn't have any money, so those people who had some money stayed and waited for the ferry boat to Sweden if they really wanted to go to Sweden. The others went to Denmark. That's this kind of thing that's just so unrealistic to think about. You don't care. You've lost everything. You've left everything. You've left Croatia, which is, people speak the same language, really. Bosnian, Croatian and Serbian are not different languages, you know. That's something that people should understand. It's just dialects, you know.
But even a lot of Balkan people don't understand.
No, they don't want to understand. They just, yeah.
There's a scientific proof now that it's the same language, right?
Yeah, I know. But it's you don't want to talk about it because no. You're just going round and round.
We would open up a new, completely new topic.
So when you're fleeing from the ex-Yugoslavian territory, it doesn't really... you don't really care anymore. Now you've fled a long way from your home and you don't care where you're going to end up.
Mm.
So we ended up in Sweden, and that was, I don't know, I lived there for 5 years and my life have been both scary and both nice in Sweden. It depends. When you come, you don't know the language, you don't know the people. People don't know you. People are scared of you. People think, I don't know what they think. Why did you came there? But we had some problems during our first months living in Sweden with the neo-Nazis and closed-minded people. So, yeah, you ran away from hatred to come to other kind of hatred, and you don't really understand why those people down in Bosnia hate you or why those people in Sweden hate you. I think it's the same problem for people now that are fleeing or running away from anything that happens in Syria and everywhere. They have the same problem, you know, hatred everywhere. Hatred at home, hatred when they come to other country because they are different or whatever. Anything else. So it's a bit hard to accept a new way of living and to accept all that hatred and just to be strong and move on, grow up and, you know, and fight against all of that and not hate anybody, but just work on yourself to prove to the others that you are no different than any other man or woman.
But was there more hatred than nice and welcoming people?
What?
Was there more hatred people or people full of hate and they were like or they were skeptical about you more than welcoming people?
I understand that the people are afraid of things that they don't know about. I understand that people are afraid of different looking people, you know. But for me it was like strange for people calling me black or whatever when I'm not black, you know. I'm European, for God's sake, you know.
Maybe you should say that you're a white, you have white skin.
Yeah,
you have like
white,
a brown white skin, but you know.
Yeah, well,
but you could also be from everywhere.
You have a word in Swedish which is called svartskalle, and that means black-headed, like your hair is black. But even my hair wasn't black, so mm-hmm. so it's like, just don't get it.
But did you also experience some advantages that you just can get in Sweden because it's developed?
As I said, it took me time to you know, you're a teenager. I was 13 then. You are like having problems of your own already with all the changes that happen to someone's body at that mm-hmm. age. Your mind is, you know, you don't have words to explain what your mind is thinking at that time. You don't have any self-esteem because somebody's hating you for no reason. You don't know what to do with that. So it took me time to grow from that to just don't care anymore about the hatred and be the loving person, maybe show to the people that it's okay to love and not hate, and it's okay to accept the differences, it's okay to realize that we are not aliens, not, you know, somebody who is going to hurt them. And when I realized that, and when I stopped caring, everything was different. People opened up, and I had a lot of Swedish friends at the point when I had to leave, or not had to leave, but when we decided to move back, I really had a good life, nice life. Of course, many opportunities, schools and languages and anything else. So, of course, I liked my life at the end in Sweden.
Mm-hmm. And did you still monitor what happened in Bosnia and Herzegovina?
Yeah, of course. And maybe you mentioned it earlier when we spoke, not officially, all the propaganda. Media, it's so... You could talk about it for hours.
Okay, maybe we will do another episode of Bosnia.
No, but it's just like... I didn't decide to be a journalist then, but it could easily be the point when I could decide, because the media and all the reports from Bosnia and everything that people were talking about, it just didn't seem right. It wasn't like that. You could just see all the women or men running with you know, with the bags and the villages, and it wasn't really like that. You know, it was quite different. And the only media which was showing that was actually the MTV, which was totally different from the MTV now, like music television, and Bonovox and U2 and the famous song Miss Sarajevo, if anybody remembers it now. They showed what people really are. They showed people in Sarajevo fighting with culture, fighting with concerts, fighting with love, and living their life as strong as they can, just fighting against all that hatred. So war isn't just something you see on media news reports. It's so much, much brighter. It's so much different than news reports are showing you. So for me, it was hard to fight against that also, to explain to people, it's not like that, you know, it's quite different, you know. It's not like everybody in Bosnia is from small village, which is getting burned, which is getting, you know, it's quite different. I cannot explain, I'm not very good at explaining that part of the situation, but yeah, most of all, Muslims and Christians and people just started to get a picture that it was mostly about religion, and it wasn't. So maybe that's something that I'm trying to explain.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
You can.
But it still felt. Something.
Yeah.
But it still felt like home for you, right? It always was your place,
yes,
where
course.
You were born. So
yes,
you were always interested, like, what's going on? Can we maybe go back? I mean, did you talk about that with your family?
Yes,
often?
Of course. Yeah, well, we had some kind of our own private difficulties in my family with my mother and her psychological condition during the war and after the war. Her whole family stayed in Mostar, so it was quite hard for her sisters and mother. It was quite hard for her to move on, to take care of her own family, her children and husband, when she was, like, cut off. So the first time we went to Mostar after the war, it was 1997, 4 years after we came to Sweden. And I fell in love with the place all over again, completely, even if it was ruined, even if it was divided. I fell in love with people, you know. I had the feeling that I belonged there. And I was like, if you're not going back, I'm going back. Next year I'm going to be 18 and I'm going back, and I'm going to start trying to change the situation there. I'm going to start rebuilding the country, rebuilding the youth, rebuilding anything that can be rebuilt And we went back in 1998, mostly because of me. They like to say that it's because of me, because I wanted to go back. But really, I think it's, they had the same idea. So.
But why do you think you wanted to go back? Because I think you don't really, you didn't really have friends at this age, because they all fled, I think. And in Sweden,
I had old friends. I met, I had a lot of friends, which I stayed in contact with, letters and...
They were there during the war?
Some of them were there, some of them were in Germany, some of them were in Switzerland, some of them were in Italy.
Refugees. They all came back?
Yes, most of them came back. Most of them came back.
And can you describe how was the situation in Moscow? I mean, it was 2 years after the war ended, it was in 1995, and you came back in
1997, and we came back for like, totally came back in 1998.
Mm-hmm. I mean, how was the city? How was the impression?
Destroyed,
when you got there?
Totally destroyed, because Mostar is the most destroyed city in ex-Yugoslavia, Vukovar and Mostar. Totally destroyed. It was very hard to look at it, to watch it, to realize it, to understand that everything is divided. It was really hard to cope with that. But that pushes you even more to fight, you know, not to fight with hate, but with love and understanding, to just, you know, let's rebuild. You get this idea like crazy 18-year-old girl, you know, let's rebuild, let's do it all over again, let's do something. You have some kind of strength, you just want to do something. And that's the main reason why I wanted to come back. And anything else didn't matter. It didn't matter that I had a nice life in Sweden. It didn't matter that I had a boyfriend and friends in Sweden and I could live happily and everything. I just felt that I have to be there to rebuild.
And when I understood it right, you grew up on the western side of the city.
Yes, yes.
That was now Croat.
Yes, and we didn't came back there. We came back to other place, which we bought, and we built it for 5 years. We've been building the house because...
Like you bought a ruin?
Yes. You have like totally messed up situation there. When you come back, then the people there hate you because you didn't stay. You know? So you face the hatred again. You face the fact, oh, you had such a good life in Sweden. You don't care that we died here. You don't care that we were killed here, and were hungry here. And, you know, it's so many obstacles on the way when we should all really think about getting out of it all and living normally. And my father had a very huge problem finding work, because he wasn't there, my mother too. So we build our lives slowly, you know, just with not so much money and the things that we had. We just tried to cope with that, with everything that's new for us again, but hoping that something would happen, somehow we will manage. And we did, in some kind of way we did.
How did you help, like, building up the city again? I mean, I just imagined that it was like a battlefield and stones, like, because the houses are mostly built with, like, old stones and they must have been, like, everywhere, ruins everywhere.
Yeah.
How is there to live in a destroyed city like this?
I don't know. As I said, not every single man or woman or boy or girl was this, that in that way that they hated us because we were there during the war. There were a lot of people who came back and there were a lot of people who thought differently. I fell in love with people. I didn't look at the city anymore. I didn't look at destroyment anymore. I just fell in love with the people. They were so happy, you know, and I think most of the people here is going to tell you, or if you ask them privately, they are going to tell you that those first years after the war were much happier than now. I don't know why. Yeah, I know why. People just were glad that it was all over. No more shooting, no more fighting, no more hunger, no more, you know, all of the bad things that war brings up. So people were happy. People were singing, going to concert, drinking, having fun. So I fell in love with that people, you know. They were so full of positive energy. And I wanted to be a part of it. I didn't want to miss that. If I wasn't here during the war, I was too young to help then. I'm old enough to help now, so I'm going to help in any kind of way. In my way, it turned out to be a journalist who is going to tell the real stories, who is going to tell the stories about stealing, corruption, and anything else that happens in this country up to this day, still. So, I don't know. That's something that you decide. It's something, those turning points that you have in your life, you know, are you going to take that way or this way? You just decide. You don't know why. You just feel that it's the right decision. I don't feel that now anymore. I regret. But I think I would, if I had to do it all over again, I would. So.
What do you regret that you came back?
Yeah.
Really?
You get tired. We are now talking about period that happened 20 years ago. You just get tired because nothing is changing. Everything is staying the same. You feel almost powerless that all those positive, happy people that you met 20 years ago is not there anymore. You're just tired. And many of them left, by the way. Many of them left searching for better lives, not running away from war and shooting and everything, just searching for better life.
Perspective.
Yes, because here it's so hard to get it. It's so hard to see it. With all the political and national leaders, with all the national communities, religion, you just don't see any perspective.
Was that the reason to why you don't live in Mostar anymore?
Yeah.
You live in Sarajevo now?
I finished high school and I wanted to study. I studied journalism here in Sarajevo, but it was only in Sarajevo that you could study journalism. Later on, many private universities showed up. But at that time, it was only in Sarajevo.
Yeah.
Someone just opened a window and pulled a
paper
airplane out.
Secret message.
Why is he doing this?
I don't know. People are bored.
Bored at work. We have to maybe say that we're sitting at your workplace right now.
Yeah, workplace. I'm not doing anything, so it's good not to do anything during work time.
It's the Bosnian way of working a little bit more casual than we Germans do.
Not
especially.
But most of them, yeah. Yeah. As I said earlier, they are just lazy because they don't see any perspective and they think that's the right thing to do. Yeah, well, they maybe figure that things will solve themselves out some kind without any help. Yeah, what were we talking about?
I got a little bit distracted too.
Yeah.
But it was just that there are a lot of private high schools.
Yeah. So I came to study in Sarajevo mostly because I wanted to study, and the second part because I got tired living in Mostar and see all the things that I saw then, you know, that dividing situation which still goes on. So, yeah. It sounds like I got tired mostly of my life, of fighting at all the
but
places.
Maybe it's because people just lost their spirit, right? And like you explained, I mean, I can understand it a little bit better. There was this feeling where you feel powerful because you can build up things and build up your country. You even came back from a developed and very futuristic, you know, country with what gives you a good perspective for your life, and you came back, wanted to build something, and then you obviously
you get tired. Mm. You get tired. And as I said, I moved here and then I started working here and worked at some famous TV show which was called 60 Minutes, which was almost like the 60 Minutes of CBS. We're talking about, as I said earlier, corruption, stealing, murdering, lying, every single thing that nobody else was brave enough to talk about, we got a lot of threats. My editor-in-chief had a police escort for 2 years because of the threats. And we were talking about the same things for 10 years. And everybody was listening, everybody was watching, but nobody did anything to change it. And to change it, you need something that we already have, and it's an election. If you always vote for the same people, you cannot hope that anything would be differently. You have to give a chance to others.
But we talked about it already, yes. Yeah, and I think there are not really other options that you can vote for.
You have
for,
to try. Right? You know, in these 20 years that from war to this very day, you could have tried like, how many? Four? Five times? With an election every 4 years? Five times? There's no explanation or there's no excuse for that. Like, there is no excuse for not voting, you know. And many young people are not voting.
Yeah, I know.
People, not peoples. So you get tired. And then you're stuck at this workplace. And you're just, like, doing things for salary, you know. Just...
Yeah, when I first also came here, I mean, you're rolling a cigarette right now.
Yeah.
And it was so strange when I came here because it's allowed to smoke. And I mean, this building we're sitting in here is a bunker. It actually was a bunker, yeah. Right? It's a huge, depressive building.
This building was built during the famous age of Sarajevo in 84 and the Winter Olympic Games, which everybody wants to remember so gladly because it was a happy time. And that's the story that I hate also, that everybody's remembering the happy times and not creating our own new happy times. You know, we always talk about Winter Olympic Games and the big concert U2 had and the big concert there and, you know, always remembering, oh, now it's 15 years, oh, now it's 20 years. And every year is the same. You're just stuck with it. You don't go on.
But isn't that also why Tito is still so... extremely popular and famous because people just like to remember the good old times.
Yeah, but you have like the story about him as it is in any other country after the Second World War. He rebuilt the country, and we are talking about mass destruction. You know, you cannot talk about Second World War without imagining the pictures of, I don't know, Berlin, Dresden, whatever, you know, those huge piles of stones and destroyed buildings and destroyed, you know, it was the same here. Everything was destroyed. And that guy rebuilt the country for the first 15 years after the war. 20 years from the world, from 93, 92, 95, there are still a lot of destroyed things.
When you go to Mostar today, there are
Mostar is great now, how it was, yeah.
It's, of course, it's beautiful and it's awesome, but there are still so many ruins and destroyed houses
everywhere.
But
believe me, it's great now when you compare it to how it was 20 years ago.
And when you think about Mostar now, or when you go back, how is it for you? Is it still home, or is it just an episode in your life? I mean,
Both. Both home and both an episode. It depends how I look at it. I love being there. I miss that, really. But that hope that I had that it's going to be as it was long time ago is gone. So that's the main problem that I have with Mostar. You just at the end you realize that it's never going to be the same. And that kills you. Slowly, but it kills you. So now I'm just glad to see that the bridge is there, the tourists are there, many people, you know, the green and the sun and the warmer place. But if we are going to talk about Mostar, then I must say that Mostar didn't have an election for like 12 past years because they cannot agree who is going to be who is going to take what, which municipality, which side, which street. They can still not agree about anything, so the political situation is pretty bad. And of course, the nationalism is still there, even if the tourists feed both sides and both nationalities, and the money is the same for everybody, but the hatred is still there, so if I can say it in that way.
And I think it's so strange because, I mean, it says, or it explains the history in every travel guide, but a lot of tourists go to Mostar because it's usually like on the front cover of every travel guide, yeah, because of the old bridge. Yeah. And it's strange because I have the feeling that because of this divided city story, there is an attraction to people to, yeah, go there, course, but they don't think of it as something horrible because the city is divided and so close, just divided through a very narrow river. But I still think that people think it's like some fun game, and they read about it and they think like, okay, there live the Croats, there are the Bosnians, so okay, it's interesting. It's like, look at animals at the zoo and being cool with it because there is a cage, and so, and you don't think it's reality, but I think people don't really get it, what happened there and what is still like this huge problem of the city. And I think it's horrible what happens there.
I think the problem is that many people here think it's a big game. But when it comes to people going there as tourists, I get them too. They want to see something different. They want to see something unusual to their country or to their normal life. And that's okay. And it's okay for people not to care so much. I understand that, because if you should care about every single divided city in the world, then you're nuts. But it's up to us, you know, to show this country, to show this Mostar and Sarajevo, those cities, at its best light, at its best. But it's so hard, you know, when you have so many things distracting you. And when I asked you one time earlier if you can explain or describe country in your own words, you said you have so many opportunities, but you don't use them. That's it, you know. You have a country which is so small. We are actually a small country. We cannot compare ourselves with any European country because we are a small country. It doesn't do anything to live better, and we can live better. Of course we can. We have everything that we need. Oh my God, in Somalia you have, you know, like 2 years that there hasn't been any rain. You know, people don't have water. Here you have water in your tap, you know. You have every single thing that you need to live normally, but you don't. That's the problem, you know. That's, we cannot teach or show tourists anything when we don't know how to use it. So that's it.
Maybe one last question: do you teach your children in a different way because of your history?
I teach them the same that my parents taught me. You know, people are good and bad, and that's it. There's not so much to explain about that. You know, there are no differences if you call like this or like that. So I teach them that, but quite differently at school and with other children, so they are already confronting their opinions with others. Because, for example, few days ago there was a fight with this girl in school because the girl said there is a God and Ida said there is no God. And I don't know why she said that. She doesn't want to believe like we don't, but we don't pressure her or put any kind of pressuring about that. It's not something children should think about. But she's like, you don't believe, I won't believe either. Okay. So they had a fight about that. So that's like already coming to some problems.
And usual school everyday problems, yeah, in Bosnia. That's so strange.
Yes, I agree.
Okay, I agree. Thank you so much.
I'm sorry if I wasn't like you expected.
It was perfect.
You think?
Yes.
I think I thought blah, 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 blah from all over the places. Yeah.
No, it's so good that you can give an impression, you know, to people who listen to us, that they can understand it better, can understand the war better, your history, the everyday life you have now here in Bosnia with what you're struggling and...
Well, simply, when you think about it from this point, I don't think about it in that way. I don't think about the things that there was war here, I was refugee, and I was like... Life is hard even without that stuff and things, with sickness and dying and everything. So you just keep going on, you know, you just don't turn back and don't think about things that they were. I don't know.